Today's program was brought to you by Blueprint, the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. For more information, visit blueprint.com. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Dan Mabolte. It's been a couple of heavy weeks in the industry. There was Tales of the Cocktail, which we all made it back from pretty easily, except for one Southwest flight that kept us in the airport for a little while. But we all got back. And then out here at Roberta's, just on Saturday, there was the Bushwick Block Party. And, you know, if you could, you know, beat the sweat and, you know, the elbow-to-elbow drinking and partying, God bless you, you made it. And speaking of Tales of the Cocktail, I had the great fortune of hanging out with a good buddy of mine, bartender here in New York City, Hiram Dorman. Welcome to the show. It's been a while. I've been asking you a couple of times, and, like, finally we got a chance to do this. Just serendipitously, you have a day off after many days of work and post-tales.
Indeed, yes. And it was perfect timing. You asked me to come on, and here I am.
Nice. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, so do you remember anything from Tales of the Cocktail?
I remember arriving, and I remember some drinking. No, actually, I remember it very well. It was a good time. This is my second Tales, and the first time that I went, I didn't know what I was doing. I overplanned. I went to seminars all day, every day, and I had scheduled myself so intensely that I didn't have a chance to enjoy the city. So the goal this time was to just sort of go with the flow and make no plans beyond 18 hours or so.
Sure. What were some of the seminars and events that you went to both the year before and this year that really stuck out to you?
I went 2 years ago, and I mean, this was 2 years ago. I don't remember exact. I don't remember all the seminars I went to, but Eben Friedman did a really interesting one on protecting your intellectual property as a bartender, or as a beverage director, or as a consultant. Which I was incredibly informative to me, you know, I learned a lot there. There was these seminars, sometimes they work out really well, and then other times you just end up getting advertised to for an hour by whoever the sponsor is. But there was a great one that Centauri did 2 years ago with I thought that we were going to learn about Japanese whiskey, and we did, but we also learned about ice carving and ended up having Japanese whiskey, full pours of Yamazaki 12 and Hakushu 15 being passed around to 200 guests with hand carved ice balls that they had worked on, I guess, that morning or whatever.
Wow.
Which was very cool. I didn't do any seminars this year though. I mean, this sounds terrible, but I just went to parties. I mean, my girlfriend and I were down there, and we went out to eat. We went to parties, and if we were invited to a tasting room, or sometimes there were things off the beaten path, we went to those, and it was great.
Yeah, I always say I'd rather skip class and go straight to the party, but it's, you know, there are so many great, like, seminars and different just like educational conferences, like, that are within that conference that should not be missed, even for people who've been in the industry for a very long time. And, you know, like, you know, we can't, it sounds really shitty because we kind of sometimes position ourselves as kind of like know-it-alls, but but you know, there's always more to be learned, and that's one of the great things about, to me, about this industry and about bartending. Speaking of that, actually, how did you get into this industry?
Well, it started with growing up in a family where there was no drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that that fascinated me. Why do other people drink, and what does it do, and you know, and eventually how is it made? I don't think it ever occurred to me to bartend until one day when I was, you know, this is how it always happens. You're underage. I was 17 years old, and my best friend Nick, his both of his parents had gone out of town for spring break simultaneously, and so we had spring break, and it was a week running amok in both of his parents'
house. That's a dangerous time for parents to leave.
Yeah, sorry Gary and sorry Gail, but yeah. So first night we're there, and we're sitting in front of a liquor cabinet with Nick's Playboy bartender's guide open in front of us, and we say, what can we make? And the first cocktail I ever made was a sidecar, we made all of the cocktails that we were capable of making with the ingredients we had on hand, and afterwards we said we should be bartenders. I mean, we were at the time under the impression that you made lots of money and got lots of women, and that was what bartending was about. I eventually became a bartender. And
you do realize that at the age of 17, you probably made more cocktails than most bartenders will ever make in their life.
Just
in the greater scheme of things.
Well, we only made about six drinks.
I know, so, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. The sidecar was probably better than, well, no, it wasn't. It was probably terrible. But yeah, so I started getting really into beer and really into bourbon when I was about 19. Had a place where I could buy it, so I decided, well, I can't afford to become an expert in any of these other spirits that are expensive, so I'm going to learn about bourbon and buy bourbon. And but I had no guidance. I didn't know any bartenders. I didn't go to bars. I didn't have money to go to bars. I didn't have a fake ID. So I turned 21 and went to bartending school, which is, you know, I mean, that's what you do, right? And quickly realized after a few hours that was a mistake because I knew more than anybody else there, including the people I was supposed to be listening to. And that was a kind of odd experience because it wasn't really we weren't learning the type of bartending I wanted to do. I was a nerd. And I had no outlet for my nerdiness. I just knew that even at that time, I wanted to work with fresh ingredients and premium spirits. And, yeah. And so but I stuck it out through bartending school because, you know, they tell you this is a pipeline to a job.
Right.
And eventually found out that it was not.
Sure.
And so I moved to New York and decided not to make the fake resume that bartending school told me to make. I made a resume that highlighted my inexperience, and I got a job at the first place that I walked into, which wasn't a great job, but it was a bartending job. And had someone told me, you know, go to, I don't know, Little Branch or anywhere and beg to bar back.
Sure.
That had I the chance to do it over again, I would have. But again,
I think there's a lot of virtue in starting in places where it's not like a cocktail bar, you know, like you have to learn to me, like to actually bartend first, you know, to tend the bar and deal with people and situations that you might not want to have to deal with and crappy ingredients, you know, you know, like getting into it that way, it makes you strive to, you know, better yourself and to like, you know, elevate the bar around you, you know? And then you know, you work into the cocktail bars. That's just my opinion. And so I think you'd be a much different bartender as far as, like, you know, the people skills and everything, like, had you started at some place like Little Branch, even as a bar back. You know?
Sure. But it took a long time to get to the point where I was making cocktails. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was making cocktails, really, I'd been a bartender for 4 years, 5 years. Mm-hmm. But you know, at my first job, I would love to say everything was free pour, but I don't even think we had pour spouts. We didn't measure anything. I remember asking, what's the pour on, you know, a whiskey on the rocks? and nobody could tell me how much to pour. They were just like, ah, I don't know, up to here. And we had these like big wide glasses with no marking on them or anything. So some of the bartenders like to pour about 4 ounces. Other bartenders like to pour one. I split the difference. But even once I started bartending, it was a long time before I knew that was all I wanted to do.
Yeah. I know, I kind of feel the same way. Like, I was very similar situation, you know, always like looking around at cocktail books, and I didn't have a full liquor cabinet in front of me to see what I could make. It was just like, oh, what is curacao? Curacao? Mm-hmm. What is that ingredient? And, you know, like, luckily some of the really kind of cheesy and not so cheesy cocktail books would have, like, you know, a glossary in the back, you know, of like what these ingredients are. So that's, it was the most in, like, nose in a textbook I'd probably ever been in my entire life is with cocktail books.
Well, the first cocktail recipe book that I had was a Mr. Boston's Guide, mm-hmm. Which at the time was the source, my only source of information, really, to what any of these things were. And I still have that guide, and I still refer back to it and laugh at, you know, and some of the stuff in there is not half bad. Some of the recipes actually aren't half bad. But when you've got a recipe for a classic daiquiri, you know, a few pages away from the section on, you know, college bar shooters,
yeah,
it's hard for a young impressionable guy to make sense of what's what.
Right. Like what you should be making for guests.
What I should be making, what I should be caring about.
Yeah.
I remember when I turned 21, I was living in Humboldt County in Northern California, and I was living in a big Victorian mansion with a ton of roommates. And I put a bar together in my closet, and I just bought everything. It's like, I just buy everything. So I had, you know, I had nice whiskey, and I also had Kahlua. I had,
and like 99 bananas.
I had everything. I thought I needed to be able to make everything. And then at night, about 9 o'clock, I would start making drinks. And my roommates knew if they were home at 9 or 9:30, they were probably going to get drunk. And that was me messing around, sort of teaching myself what works and what doesn't, and making a few forays into coming up with recipes of my own. I won't repeat any of those recipes because they're embarrassing.
That's pretty awesome. You know, if, especially in Humboldt County, if they weren't super stoned, they could come to your room and get drunk.
Basically.
So at what point, after this first bar job in New York City, did you, where did you move from there?
I was at Bar and Books. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know it.
Hudson Bar and Books.
Hudson, yeah. Bar and Books. Yeah. I was at Hudson Bar and Books, and that was kind of a surprise. I didn't expect to get the job. And then when I got it, I didn't expect it to be as intensive as it was, because I found myself doing all of the ordering for the bar on day one.
Oh, wow.
Which I had never done anything like that before. It ended up being a wonderful crash course in how to...
Bar management?
Yeah. But I was there. That's where I learned Scotch. And really, that was where I really learned about bars.
Yeah.
I was at the other bar for 2 years, but it wasn't until I was at Bar and Books, and which was a real bar,
yeah,
that I sort of learned why people go to bars. I didn't know why bars are good, why they're important.
Instead of like sitting at home drinking, or
yeah, it's so much cheaper to sit at home. I always thought to myself, I'm like, well, you know, I'm happy to serve these people, but I much rather. Why don't they just buy these ingredients, make it at home, and save a few bucks? I didn't understand the theater of it. I didn't understand the cultural value of it. I didn't understand the community that comes up around a bar until Bar and Books. And I mean, so
you never watched Cheers growing up? Or?
No, never watched Cheers. And if I had, it still would have been lost on me.
Oh, yeah?
So it wasn't until I was at Bar and Books that I started actually going to bars and appreciating it. Mm-hmm. Not just going to a bar to get a drink, but going to a bar because it's a bar.
Yeah.
And I'm there to be there and to experience what they're offering and to experience the staff. And so I was there. And then from there, I ended up at Intertech at Liquori Bar, mm-hmm. Where at the time, Matt Piacentini was the bar manager. He's one of the owners of Clyde Common. I don't know if you know Matt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when he left Liquori Bar to open the Beagle, I took over for him. And that was where I really got into cocktails. It was where I kind of got past just spirits and learned to make cocktails, create cocktails, appreciate cocktails. And, you know, I was there for almost 3 years.
Yeah. And especially there, I mean, you got to work with a lot of like Amari and different like the kind of like obscure spirits, which sounds to me like was kind of like subconsciously your plan all along. Was like,
I think, know, so
with your closet full of booze.
I think so. I mean, our back bar at the Liquori Bar was stupid. I mean, we had way too many bottles, to be honest. We not only did we physically have too many bottles for our shelving space, but we had too many bottles for our needs. And one time a guest comes in and said, "How often do you touch that bottle right there?" And I'm like, "When I do inventory, or if I forget what it tastes like."
Yeah.
You know, but I learned a lot of obscure stuff. I learned to work with a lot of interesting ingredients. I ended up getting really into Amaro while I was there. I had a whole page on my cocktail menu just dedicated to shaken Amaro drinks, which was that was a really fun
shaken
experience.
Amaro drinks.
Shaken Amaro drinks.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's usually, I mean, we always think about Amaro drinks being stirred. So that's,
yeah, I didn't mean for it to be shaken Amaro drinks, but when looking back on my menu now, I realize, wow, they were all shaken Amaro drinks. It's actually kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it sounds like you you really, like, kind of, each place you went, and you got, like, a pretty hardcore crash course in spirits and, like, different technique. And I think that's the way it should be, you know? You got to keep learning. You know, we got to completely go against what we just did at Tales of the Cocktail,
right? You know?
And actually keep continuing the educational process.
Yeah,
with
well,
it.
And I ultimately left Liquori Bar because I wanted to be pushed further, because when you're in charge for too long and you don't have anyone telling you, no, this is how you do it, sometimes you forget that there's another way to do it,
right?
And a better way to do it.
Sure.
And I think we all need to sort of continue challenging ourselves if we're going to continue to get better, because what was good 5 years ago is still good.
Right.
But there's now all these different types of good that we're experiencing, sure, in these different bars, and bars that impressed me 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Aren't the same.
Do you ever go back and like test out your, you know, like how you have your specs for your different classics? Do you ever go back and like test your like Sazerac cocktail?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've gone back. I have.
Is it surprising to you sometimes how you want to, like, you'll change it, you know?
Sometimes I go back and I realize the spec was better, but there are a lot of times where I go back to my spec for a classic from 4 years ago or whatever, and I realize that I hadn't experienced this important thing yet that made me understand this nuance of the cocktail. And then, of course, the funny thing is, I'm really the only one that's going to matter to.
Right, right.
Because, you know, I don't think any of my guests were thinking, you know, this isn't the right vermouth to use in this Negroni.
Right.
But as long as I know, I think that's what's important.
Absolutely. Well, dude, let's take a break.
Yeah.
And let's make a cocktail when we get back. And we'll be back in just a moment with Chaim Derelman.
Blueprint is the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. Designed to purify and detoxify, Blueprint Cleanse is made from the freshest 100% raw and USDA certified organic ingredients, cold pressed to retain nutrients and flavor. Blueprint also offers a line of organic juices, cold-pressed and raw, in a variety of fruit and vegetable combinations, and available in individual bottles. Blueprint Cleanse is available at Whole Foods Market and many other retailers across the U.S. To learn more about their line of organic cleanses, juices, and other products, visit them today at blueprint.com or call them at 866-774-6831. That's 866-774-6831. Work hard, play hard. Cleanse, repeat.
My own heart today. My tears blocked from streams. scarred face.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. Today in the studio, we have Chaim Dauerman. And we were just talking about basically like his journey from a teenage mixologist to the bars that he's at now, which is at Desnuda and at Gin Palace here in New York City. And we were just talking about, you know, the learning experience and you know, not just with like spirits and cocktails, but also learning how to become a bartender in the first place. And then right before the break, we were talking about making cocktails, and luckily today he's brought a cocktail with him on the show. And what do you got here?
Well,
you mixed that up very quickly, by the way.
Yeah.
Impressive.
What I've got here is it's one of our cocktails at Desnuda. And so at Desnuda, it's a cevicheria. Have you been?
Yeah.
Have you come by?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was when I was there, or when Aaron was there. Yeah. So, for listeners, it's a cevicheria, and the, cocktail list is all based on South American spirits. It's called the Reformer. It's, Avoir Ambarana Cachaça, which is, aged cachaça that I'm extremely fond of these days. A little Fino sherry, cherry hearing, a syrup of Moruga scorpion and pasilla chilies, and Peychaud's bitters.
Woo! That's nice.
Now, this is coming out a little hot because it's usually a bit more diluted because we're just having it on the rocks right now. I didn't stir it. But chilies are a really big part of what I'm trying to do with the cocktail program there. I used to roll my eyes when guests would say, do you have any spicy drinks? Do you have any spicy drinks? Do you have any spicy drinks? And so finally I was just like, fine. Okay. Now we're going to do spicy drinks. Yeah. And it turns out it's really fun.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I feel the same way. It's like, you know, a lot of times, like, what do? Like, when someone asks for a spicy drink, I mean, you probably have a bottle of Tabasco back there, but, like, maybe you've got some jalapenos. But if you really have that in your mise en place, you know, it's like, there's, I mean, why wouldn't you use all these different peppers? There's so many different peppers and so many different spices to use.
It's, and like, what I've found myself doing, and what I was doing when I was coming up with the initial cocktail list, and we're about to go, and I'm about to get my hands on a lot more peppers and going to go into a new phase. But so the chilies for Desnuda come from a micro farm in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, called Nobska Farms. It's a guy named Rooster Fricky.
It's a great name.
Yeah, it is. It is a great name. Pepper enthusiast, and he specializes in exotic super hot chilies. And we don't have enough time for me to explain all the connections, like how I got acquainted with this guy. But basically, I have now found myself building cocktails around peppers, not necessarily spirits. So as far as I have the pepper, and I think, okay, what is going to go well with this? You know, the heat level, the flavor, the aroma. And so this is built around the Moruga scorpion chili, which is the hottest pepper in the world right now.
I'm glad you added the cherry hearing.
Why is that?
Because it really it works really well. The spice and the cherry go really well together, but also the kind of sweetness kind of like...
Well, I wish I had the peppers. I wish I'd brought the peppers with me. It's from a dried chili, but when you smell dried Moruga scorpions, it smells like a mix between like cherries and apricot fruit leather. Immediately I started thinking about cherry hearing, which is, I'm obsessed with cherry hearing to a really embarrassing degree. It doesn't even make any sense to me sometimes, but you'll always know when I had my hands on a cocktail list because it'll be like half cherry hearing cocktails. But yeah, it just made sense for this.
Yeah, and especially with the Peychaud bitters. Peychaud, I mean, it's already got that kind of like cherry anise flavor, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. This is a great job. It's a great cocktail.
I can't take 100% of the credit for this, because even though I came up with the bare bones of this, it was actually Chris Lauder helped me put the final touches on this. Nice. About like before we opened, we were eating dumplings and working on this drink at midnight at Desnuda when it was not a bar yet. yeah, so, but I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of other peppers are you using?
Well, right now, we've got Murray Scorpions and Pasillas. We also have, we've got another cocktail on our list featuring the Devil's Tongue Chili, which is, it's related to the habanero. In flavor, it's a little bit more stone fruit and less citrus than habanero has, but it's kind of the same heat level. We have a jalapeno drink, which is it goes into a shrub. We're about to have a lot of South American varietals that are going to come our way, probably at the end of August, and it's going to. We're going to have fresh peppers. We're going to have new dried peppers, and it's going to expand. We're at 9 drinks right now. We're going to expand quite a bit, as much as we can.
Yeah.
My intention is always to keep about a half and half spicy to non-spicy ratio on the menu.
Sure. I mean, yeah, they can't all be spicy. That's true. But, hell, I mean, like, every time this is my favorite part of making drinks. It's like finding new ingredients and, you know, I always love, you know, when Aaron Polsky's been on the show, we always talk about, like, getting in the kitchen and getting into the spice rack. And
I know.
Even with, like, Cripple Creek, you know, we were doing things with, like, SOS Chef. You've been there, I'm sure.
I know. Aaron's told me about it a bunch of times, and I have still not gone there.
Oh, man.
I'm lame.
You'd love it, dude.
Yeah.
We found these awesome dehydrated black trumpet mushrooms that we infused into Glenrothes scotch.
Yeah, I think he mentioned that to me.
Yeah.
I love being in a kitchen. In fact, one of my big regrets is that I've never worked in a kitchen before.
Yeah.
And I would love to, because I think it gives you really important skills behind the bar. But, when I was at Intertech La Cori Bar, we had a huge kitchen at my disposal. I could make ingredients all day long. And the interesting thing at Desnuda is that, we don't have a kitchen really. We have two bars. The ceviche, we don't have a hood system. We don't have stoves. We don't have open flames. It's ceviche. It's raw.
Right.
So everything I do is with whatever equipment I have on my counter. I mean, I have a juicer, obviously. I have, we've got these little electric camp burners, I guess you could call them. Not induction. Not even induction. And that's what I make all my syrups on. And It's a new experience because it's sort of, I'm still doing all the same techniques that I've done for my other drinks and even employing a few new ones, but with not necessarily the same equipment or the same space at my disposal.
Right.
I don't have the luxury of showing up on my day off and spending 5 hours in the prep kitchen while service is going on upstairs,
right,
which used to be my style. It's probably better for my personal life that I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm lucky enough to work with a lot of people. Hello, I guess pretty much the entire management staff of Prime Meats, they've all spent time in the kitchen, you know, or gone to culinary school. And so, like, you know, I remember, like, you know, 4 years ago, I was cutting up a pineapple and one of our managers walks by and he's like, "What the hell are you doing?" It's like, "That's not how you do that." Uh-huh. And I'm like, "Oh, thanks, man." You know, even like small techniques, you know, things like that. It's like even just holding a paring knife the right way, you know, like things like that. It's so much more than just like the spice cabinet and the walk-in. I feel like from the bar to the back of the house, you know, as far as things you can learn. So I think there's also virtue in like having kind of like the handicaps of not having that full kitchen. Like,
oh, it's fantastic.
You know, it's like you really get to strip down and like think about what's important for the drink. You know.
Well, I've had many experiences over the last few years where I've learned, no, you can do this with this. No, you don't need this many people. You don't need this much time. You don't need all of this. And it's taught me to push myself. You know, can I work this particular bar without a bar back? Can we work this particular bar with only one station open? Can we work this particular, how many drinks can I make in an hour? All of these things. And when you put yourself in situations where you have to make do with less, you often learn that you don't need more,
right,
and it makes everything better.
Yep, absolutely. Man, we're actually at the end of the show now.
Well,
it goes by so fast, doesn't it?
It really does.
All right.
Yep.
Well,
cheers, sir.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for these awesome drinks. And can't wait to have you back on again.
Yeah, I would love that. All right.
And when are you at Desnuda?
Usually behind the stick at Desnuda Tuesdays through Fridays, and I'm at Gin Palace with my buddy Will Pete every Saturday night.
Gin Palace on Saturdays, huh?
I yeah.
That's a hell of a time.
It is a good time, and it is my favorite time, and I'm going to work that shift until I need a walker. But I love it.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
All right. We'll come see you then.
Okay. All right. Hope so.
And please come back anytime you like.
I would love it.
All right. You've been listening to Hi, I'm Darman. Sorry. This has been The Speakeasy, and we'll catch up with you next week. All right. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.